Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
All right, you're welcome back to Thursday's Off the Ball. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by England Lions and Saracens lock George Cruz and the recently retired former Wales and Saracens player Dominic Day. They are in town to promote their new venture, which you might be able to figure out what it's called if you're watching online. It's called 45CBD. It's a company that has a range of products, including muscle rub, joint gel, as well as capsules and oils. It's available now online from 45cbd.co.uk and independent health stores nationwide. Thanks for coming in studio, lads.
Thank you for having us.
A relaxing day. More relaxing, I'd imagine, than your usual trips to Dublin, George.
Yes, yeah, and slightly, well, actually, probably just as stressful, to be honest. But I'm, like I said, I'm pretty used to, I'm just starting up doing this sort of stuff, so it's a little bit different to what I'm used to.
Mm. You'll be expecting to be back again in the next few weeks, I'd imagine.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, we've had some good rivalries so far, so fingers crossed we're in the squad.
You're a regular visitor, Dominic. You're married to an
Irish
woman.
I am indeed. My sins, but I managed to spend a month here over Christmas. So
how was that?
It was fantastic.
Is this your first genuine Irish Christmas?
It was, yeah. And it was brilliant. Way too much drinking and food, but it was fantastic. Really enjoyed it.
Well, Christmas Eve is a big day because you want to get out on Christmas Eve, have a few drinks then. And obviously, Christmas Day with the family, you're having a few drinks.
Yeah.
And it's Stephen's Day.
Yeah, a few drinks.
A lot of drinks on Stephen's Day, I'd imagine.
Managed to push that into the day after and the day after that as well.
Right. You're married to Nadia Ford, for people who don't know, who people would be very familiar with in this country.
Yeah.
How long have you been married?
That's probably something I should know.
Send her this clip. Send her this clip straight away.
How long have you been married for?
Yeah.
So this is your first Christmas. That was your first Christmas as well, post-retirement.
Yeah.
So
I went hard. I went hard and I'm paying for it at the minute. I'm that guy now who goes to the gym just in January, and then I'll probably stop going in February.
Right.
One of those memberships.
Tell me about it. So, funny, when we were talking about the office and we were saying that you were coming in, a lot of people were saying, oh, he's going to America, isn't he? He's going over playing in America. But actually, you didn't get to make that trip. You ended up having to retire.
Yeah, so I signed 2 years in San Diego. Obviously, there's a new professional league over there, but injuries, I'm afraid, have taken a toll over the years, and I decided that it was probably best that I didn't put myself through that for another 2 years. And
was it one specific thing?
It's a number of things. It's a number of things, but particularly the knees take a hammering, particularly in our position, jumping in lineouts. And
I've figured out a way now. Don't call on yourself.
Yeah,
just make the youngsters jump.
George calls the line-out, so he tends to just call it away from himself now, just to save his knees, prolong, get a couple more years in.
It's working.
Yeah. So, done and dusted now.
Big, long, agonising decision to make?
Yeah, it was difficult. Yeah, really difficult. But it's a part of your life that, well, it's the only thing that I've known for 15 years.
And such a great opportunity at your age to go to America for a couple of years. Yeah. A nice couple of years, I imagine. I know you tasted rugby down in Australia as well, but you probably had your lifestyle planned. Have you had to change your short-term plan radically?
Yeah, definitely. And Nad's, she was super excited to go as well. So, listen, at the end of the day, I've got to think long-term, look after what's left of the body, and obviously get stuck into other things.
Like day to day now, how is the body?
So I actually took a month off straight. I didn't do anything. And I was like, this is going to be great. Like, I'm going to get back and, I'll feel better. And I actually just went, it got so much worse. So I've had to sort of get my gym membership, start going to the gym, eat properly.
Curls isn't going to help your knees, though. Like, it's not going to help at all.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So you figured out you're going to have to manage this for
the
rest of your life, probably.
Yeah, exactly. So it's hard as well, because I was never one who really enjoyed the gym. So I was always getting dragged in and made to do stuff by the fitness coaches. So having to do it myself is particularly difficult.
So this new company that you've set up, perfect timing for you into retirement. George, from your point of view, you're 29. You probably are getting to that stage as well where you're thinking, what comes next? What brought about putting the company together?
I think probably in the simplest terms, in 2018 in January, WADA, which is our governing body for drugs testing, they allowed CBD as a, on its own to be taken by, you know, players. They relaxed the rules on that.
So for anyone who doesn't know, I suppose, like, for people who aren't aware of CBD, what exactly is it?
In simple form, it's a chemical compound taken from the cannabis or hemp plant, and it's called a cannabinoid. And within that, there's within like a cannabis plant, there will be 110 or so different cannabinoids. Another well-known one is THC, which is the stuff that gives you the psychoactive when you either smoke or have cannabis.
Which is still banned.
Which is still banned. Still banned. Yeah. So you've got to be quite careful around, you know, what products you take and how they've been extracted and the testing procedures around that. So
where did your interest in it come from?
It was actually from Dom. So he, you know, as rugby and he's described, his body was falling apart. He had an operation.
It wasn't quite falling apart.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I do often do this. So his body was in an okay place. But he had an operation in January. I had one in February. And we're kind of just looking at kind of alternative methods to get him back fit. And it was kind of changing room talk. And in professional sport, a lot of it's about marginal gains. You know, what can be the small bits which help you get better. And for us, we tried CBD, thought it was great, really, really liked it. And after that was, I guess, an opportunity to create a well-trusted product, which we knew the provenance of, and which we could, you know, to put out to market.
Marginal gains is obviously an interesting term in sport right now as to what's an acceptable marginal gain and what isn't. And like, this is a product, I think you probably accept that sparks quite a bit of debate. Like, I was looking at WADA's website. So you mentioned it was banned up to January 2018.
Yeah.
USADA's website says it's very difficult, if not impossible, to obtain a pure CBD extract or oil from the cannabis plant. So for sports people who are under the level of testing that you would be, that seems to imply there's a risk to taking this.
Oh, absolutely there is, yeah. And that's something that, I guess, kind of was an opportunity for us as well to clear up. We've got a couple of topical products, a muscle rub, and we're soon getting a joint gel, which have both been tested by BSCG, which is a similar company to Inform Sport. They test for over 400 banned substances, and they do cross-contamination of, you know, of products. So for us, it was a good opportunity to clear up the market in terms of product wise and testing. And
do WADA or USADA approve specific products?
WADA say CBD is legal, and it's within a company's obviously prerogative to produce test certs and you know, lab tested results that can show that, you know, that it's a good enough product to take.
Yeah. You want people to feel comfortable because, you know, it's careers on the line at the end of the day. We get drug tested professional athletes, and we need to make sure that we have done everything we can to make sure it's as safe as possible. All the testing, you know, all the correct processes in the correct labs to make sure that, you know, it's a safe product. So, you know, people being comfortable taking a product is important, and I think that we've gone a long way to try and do that.
And are your doctors at Saracens in England, they're comfortable with you taking this?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been tested 9 times this year, so, you know, this is the procedure, and it's almost like we started a cannabis-based product company, and I've been tested more. So I don't know how that's.
Who could have predicted?
Yeah, exactly.
I guess so. Like, as you point out, CBD is legal. Since 2018, ethically, there probably are still a couple of questions that I'd be interested in your thoughts on. Firstly, one of the benefits of CBD is said that it reduces anxiety, that it can help people sleep. I often think the ability to deal with nerves around big games, like especially the sort of level that you got to, like, that's part of sport. Do you feel people who take CBD have an advantage?
I mean, that's like, it's classified as a food supplement, so you could say to people who have protein, you know, have an advantage. To people who have vitamin C and vitamin D, and so to me, that argument kind of falls quite short. CBD as an isolate is a legal product for athletes to take, so it's something that...
Have you seen benefits from it? Like, do you feel that pre-match you are a bit more relaxed, that you can sleep better because of CBD?
So as a owner of a company, we're quite we've got our hands tied in terms of what we can and can't say. It is a food supplement, so we can't make any medical claims. So talking about anxiety and things like that would classify as a medical claim.
Yeah. But,
personally, I find it does help for sleep. I feel calmer and therefore sleep better. And a lot of gains can be made out of, you know, correct sleep, especially as a sportsman. You get a lot of your recovery done in your sleep. But to put it into context,
I guess the question around that is,
yeah,
is that natural?
Well, CBD, hemp and cannabis have been used for thousands and thousands of years. Only in the last 150 or 200 years has it been stripped back down to law changes. So I'd say it's as natural as anything we've been doing for thousands of years.
Mm. I mean, you know, people take caffeine to get themselves up for a game.
Mm.
So I don't see why people can't use another sort of natural substance to sort of help them prepare for a game. It's a healthier way to sort of go about that, I feel.
But on the wider scale, like, I know CBD is one thing, but medical cannabis is a completely other sector, and that's something that is, you know, in my opinion, should be allowed for professional sportsmen. It's not a performance enhancer. It comes with a load of benefits, you know, and it's a natural product. So I think people need to change their mindset, and people are. Laws are changing.
We are obviously still in a situation where both in Ireland and in Britain, the cannabis is illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, yeah,
and it feels that we're probably still a bit away from that changing.
We are, but that's on the recreational side. Within medical cannabis, you know, there were 100 or so prescriptions last year. But if you look at Germany, there were 250,000 prescriptions last year for medical cannabis. So,
you think that should be extended to sports people?
I think it should. Yeah, why shouldn't it? As long as it's legal within your country. But medical cannabis, I feel, is something different. I'm not talking recreational. I'm talking medical.
It's for a specific use.
Yeah.
The other question is probably around pain relief and about how much pain relief then is performance enhancing. Obviously, rugby has become more and more attritional. The hits are getting harder. The body is taking more and more pain. That at times you should probably just stop and listen to that pain. And that actually, whether it's painkillers or something like CBD that's easing that pain, that it's not personally... Maybe it's not the best thing for your health to be ignoring those warning signs that are there. Like, is this something that helps you get on the pitch more often than you would otherwise?
You know, I would say, first of all, you're exactly right. Painkillers, I guess, do mask a pain.
Mm.
They mask it, whereas, you know, there's research coming out, a lot more research, particularly in America, showing that CBD and cannabis is a pain reliever, but it's also aiding in the recovery process. So, you know, I just feel that's a big subject. Firstly, the whole painkiller thing, because you know you could go back and forth. Yeah, players got to pay the bills. They got to get out there. You know, they want to play. First of all, that's the main thing. Players want to be on the pitch playing. They don't want to be on the physio bed. They don't want to be pulled from training or pulled from games. They want to be out there. That's what they're there for, and they've got a short span to do that. But there also has to be a fine line between how hard do we push them. I think education's the biggest thing. Educating players as to different methods to help in their body or training loads and, you know, being able to know when and managing them and pulling them back so that they can prolong their career and, more importantly, after their career.
Yeah. It's big on the coaches and the medical team have to have a good relationship. The medical team have to be quite strong. A lot of you could get pressure from coaches, but then also, like you say, there's self-pressure. So I think that who sits right in the middle is, you know, your physio and their ability to say, no, this is what we're doing. This isn't right. This is what... And at least give you options, because, you know, if it's a World Cup final, if it's a, you know...
Who does hold the power? Because I guess that is... Like, players... like, often aren't the best person to make that decision, because you have a short career.
Mm. Yeah.
If it's the week of a World Cup final and you've got a bit of an injury, you're going to do pretty much whatever it takes within the boundaries to play, even if there are long-term effects. Like, do you look at where your body is now and think, actually, there were games where I played, where I took painkillers during the week just to get through it, that you're still going to suffer through now for the rest of your life? And do you regret that, or do you accept that?
I definitely accept that. It's been seen, and it probably to a degree is still seen as part and parcel of being a professional athlete. But that's definitely something that is starting to change. And what you're just saying then, like who holds the power? There's numerous examples of me, particularly towards the end of my career at Saracens, and Phil Morrow, who's the head of performance at Saracens. He would come up to me and be like, no, I've seen you trying to jog, like put.
I remember.
like pulling me out and being like, no, we need you for the weekend. You're not doing this session. You're not doing that. Let's manage your loads and get ready. But not all clubs are there yet. And it's a difficult one, but you know, who does it fall on? I think there's a lot of responsibility on everyone, to be honest.
Sometimes you need pushing as well. You know, sometimes if it is just something small, but you know, you need a little nudge to get out there. But it's a larger topic that I think we'll probably debate for a good while.
So, how frequently do you take CBD then before a match? Like, you've obviously got different things in the range here: muscle rubs, joint gels, capsules, oils. Do you have a routine you now go through with it?
I'm more. I speak for myself. Dom's different, but I'm more kind of as and when I want to. I see it as a supplement, much like a vitamin C and D. But I see it more as kind of as and when.
The flip side is that CBD is commonly used in America, in particular. American footballers, I was just reading this week that the NFL held a forum on pain management with the Players Association, where the Players Association, very much like you're saying, are pushing for marijuana to be legalised. In fact, I think in the last few weeks in baseball, marijuana was legalised. Yeah. The difference is American football to baseball, rugby, that they're impact sports. The damage you can do to somebody else when maybe you're not feeling the correct level of pain from the intensity of the hits. Like, do you think that's a factor in this?
I don't think they'll be pushing for cannabis use within like the day of the game. I think that's not just about. I think they'll be talking about within the week and within
recovery.
within off season.
You're obviously quite passionate about this. Is this something
I just think it's something that.
Is it something where you feel there is support starting to come for it?
100%. Yeah, there is just within the UK. Medicinal cannabis needs opening up a bit more and needs a bit more exposure. 100% it does. And I feel like it should at some point trickle through to sport. I'm aware that I probably sound quite crazy right now talking about it, linking that with sport. But, you know, in 3 or 4 years' time, it might be very well different.
It's one of those things, again, where it's having the exposure, but then the education behind it has to be right. Because a lot of people would still see medical cannabis as just people trying to smoke a joint and get high, which there's a specific purpose for medicinal cannabis, like it's prescribed. But the education is not just, you know, for the public. Like there's a massive gap between the doctors prescribing the products, and that's where it's falling down with prescriptions.
And this is like high grade, you know, it's been through all tests. It's been through everything that, you know, any other medicine would have been through. That's medical cannabis. That's what I'm talking about.
I just think a lot of people, look, you're obviously well aware of the debate that's around CBD and probably much more so around painkillers, that like people watch a Rugby World Cup group stage, quarterfinal, semifinal, week after week, the intensity of those hits, the damage it's doing to the body, yet the players are going out there, are working through it, are taking things that are covering over the pain that they're actually going through, and that the effects we're probably not going to know for 10, 20 years.
Yeah, sure. I don't have an answer for that. I mean, I don't have an answer to that because I'm probably have done or am doing the same thing. So
was this a response? Because I have some of the quotes from when you were in Australia and talking about the painkiller culture that was there. And like you use the word that often comes up with this when rugby players talk about it, like a cookie jar that they walk down the bus almost with, take your pick. Was this a response, your interest in CBD, that something that wouldn't be as harmful as like the amount of painkillers that a lot of rugby players end up taking?
Yeah, listen, it's I personally see it as an alternative. Like you spoke there about you won't see the effects of cannabis possibly for 20, 30 years. Well, it's very similar to painkillers. Like, if you're taking prescription drugs, which have been obviously given to you, then we're not going to know those effects for till long after we're retired. Mm. So my answer to that, I mean, to your previous question would be, what's better, taking, not masking a pain, but sort of going along the route of painkillers, or going along the route of a natural substance, which is, you know, organic, natural.
Is that painkiller culture still there?
It's, like I said, this is a larger topic in terms of, and it's something that has so many points to, in terms of, like what we discussed, does the player want to go out there so much? Is it coach led? Is there not enough medical staff sticking up for either side? But I think it's part and parcel of what you do. I do believe it's part and parcel of what you do. There's an understanding. I have been through times when I've pushed myself, knowing thinking it's probably not the right thing to do. But 100%, you push yourself because you got to do those sort of things.
Does that cycle not need to change? Because, like, listen, you're obviously an icon,
yeah.
And like young players coming through Saracens are looking at your career and how you've achieved it, and you battle through the pain. That if they're going to do it, they're going to have to do the exact same thing. They're going to have to take a certain amount of painkillers a certain amount of time. They just got to suck it up. Whereas that's not probably the right thing to do. Like, you're accepting that there's probably going to be some long-term damage when you retire.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what you're telling 17-year-olds.
Yeah.
That's what's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say less emphasis on... You can go down the route of not having to take a load of painkillers and that sort of stuff. I think that's been blown up here in terms of how much people have to take. And I know O'Driscoll did a large piece on it as well. But I think that's been blown up. But...
Well, how long ago was it you were in Australia?
4 years.
And so you were talking at the time it was a tub of tramadol, codeine, diazepam that they're walking down with. Like, I know you were saying that was particularly loose, but it's not that long ago.
Yeah, but what I would say as well is that it was all prescribed. Like, they were all prescribed medicines for a particular purpose. And what I would also say is that there is a place for it. There is a place if used properly. But, you know, there's also, we feel, a place for a more natural substance if used properly as well.
Mm. The longer thing, the bigger things are the injuries and things like that, which, so I've had 7 operations, so they're the things that are going to stick with me a bit longer. And that's something that, you know, if someone is getting into sport, then that's something that they've got to be fully aware of. But I don't think that hasn't changed forever, you know.
Let's move on to an easier topic.
I'm sweating now.
The last few months for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk the World Cup first.
Yeah.
And getting to a World Cup final, like, I'm sure it's a massive disappointment when you don't win it. Mm. Like, some of the performances along the way, like England got right up there. 3-4 months on, how do you reflect on it?
Just about stop crying at night. You know, we're through that stage, so that's good. But
how long are you crying for? How long are you actually genuinely upset?
Yeah, like, you definitely still think of, you know, you suddenly get a reminder of something, like, oh, that's annoying. And there's a bit of, like, you know, what if scenario. But there also is a definite, the longer, like, from it, it's happened, that the more I get a good sense of, like, what an experience it was, you know, to be in a competition like that, and to get to the, you know, the highest level of it, was unbelievable. But also to be in a culture like that in Japan, and the way they put that on, you know, 2020 Olympics is going to be phenomenal there. What will be well worth a trip over there, and it's...
Yeah, because we get on to your short-term future in a moment, but everything I've read is, like, you absolutely fell in love with Japan and everything
it was
about.
Yeah, I love the culture, I love the food, I like the people.
So even though it's a World Cup, you obviously got out and about and...
Yeah, well, we're there for, what, 2 months or so, so you can't sit in your room that long because, I don't know, you're going insane.
There's so much cards you can play.
Exactly, exactly. So, but, no, I loved it. I thought it was really well put on, and I guess I was just really... fortunate to be part of a group that you know, we did have troubles pre the World Cup in terms of really making sure that our culture fitted and make sure we were, you know, good friends off field, and we worked incredibly hard on that.
How'd you do that? There's always you always think of England squads, rugby, football. There's always stories afterwards about it wasn't a happy camp, really. Like that, by the sounds of it, something Eddie Jones was very aware of.
Yeah, I think there was, like I said, there was stuff we had to work on, and that was one of our biggest work-ons, to then be better on the field. And that sounds a cliche, but you know, we worked very hard in terms of a load of like group activities which weren't really forced, so it was quite player-led. You know, there was an actual genuine interest to get out of your room and do, you know, play cards together, go out for coffee, you know, go on trips around Japan. So there was a big initiative to do that, but I think the biggest thing that was player led to it didn't feel fake or anything like that, and therefore you could grow a bit more.
Yeah, you came on for the second half of the final. From a personal point of view and the amount of game time you got, and like you look back at last year's Six Nations, you were starting that victory against Ireland. Was there any disappointment that you weren't in that 15, or did you come away thinking, you know what, I was able to do myself justice over that World Cup?
Of course, there's disappointment. You know, you want to be starting and playing every minute, every time you can play. So there's a bit of disappointment there, but there was, and without it being a cliche, there was a wider picture view on, you know, that it 100% is going to be a 23. That if it's going to win, it's going to be a 31, really. So there was a wider picture view, and I definitely bought into that. I'm a big fan of, you know, if you doubt something, then make sure you're gonna do the best of it. So, I didn't feel, you know, undone by. I bought into what we're trying to do.
You've been a part of some ridiculously good team performances, whether it's for club or country over the last few years.
Yeah.
The semi-final against New Zealand, is that as good as it gets?
Yeah, that was good. That was good crack. Like just the.
Did you sense that week that level of performance was coming?
We knew we'd been working very hard towards something, and I think the
Obviously in Ireland we were trying to console ourselves after the quarterfinal by saying, this New Zealand team is clearly unbeatable. They're better than they were even over the last two World Cups, and then obviously England turn up and show a different side.
Apologies if that's. I think we were building, and then we didn't get an opportunity to play against France because of the weather.
It all went in your favour. We're aware of that.
No, but we were building, and I think we wanted to have a real decent game against them because of, you know, the way the group went. We went to more inexperienced teams, and then Argentina and France. So we were building towards bits, but it was just, you know, you need a bit of luck, you need a bit of you know, things to go your way. But I think when we, in that sense, we were everyone was on the same page at the same time, and that's what kind of.
But you smashed them up.
Yeah, but
I don't think they look like scoring.
They did score.
Did they?
Yes.
They scored, but they were like, the game was over long before the end.
Yeah. Didn't even watch it, sorry.
Typical Welshman. Couldn't care less.
Yeah.
How do you get on with Eddie Jones?
I think he's a great coach. I'm not just saying that. He's, for me, I like very direct, very clear instructions.
He is like that, is he? Because like we obviously see the public Eddie Jones who sits in the press conference and is very abrasive and is either funny or offensive, depending on which way you look at it. But generally, I think most people see there's probably an underlying sense of humour there with him. But he is very direct at that as well. Is he like that with the players?
Yeah, he's just clear. I think as a player, I'm sure you agree with me, Dom, the most important thing you want is, you know, reasons as to why is things happening, even in training, why are you training like this, why you're picked, why you're not picked, you know, and just a general clarity in terms of game plan as well. And for me, he brings that, ticks the boxes in that sense. And then it's hard to argue, because if there is an actual reason for why you weren't selected, because maybe someone's a better ball carrier or whatever the reason is, then you can accept that because that's his opinion, and you know, you can then work on it, but you can accept it.
So there's the disappointment of the final, and then you go back and you're expecting to go back to the warm bosom of Saracens, this all-conquering side, dominating Europe, dominating the Premiership, and you walk straight into one of the biggest scandals in probably English sport in recent times with what happened with the wage cap and £5.5 million fine, 35-point deduction. As players, what's been the reaction?
Get on with it.
Simple as that.
Yeah. Simple as that.
But does it take away, do you feel, from what you've achieved? You'll obviously always have the moments of the days. But again, looking further down the track, when we're talking in 20 years about Saracens, do you think as players the conversation has now changed from the all-conquering dominant team of their era to a team that cheated?
I personally don't think so. I think if you look at it and pick it apart, you know, in terms of how we got there, in terms of creating a load of players, you know, from academy level and bringing them through, you know, I think there's a great argument against that.
Would you accept there's an asterisk around everything that's happened?
I can see people's points of views. I'm not going to deny it. I can see people's point of views, but it's something that, for me, I'm comfortable within the situation.
Is there any sense of annoyance among the players that this was going behind? I don't think anyone's overly aware as to how much certain players knew of what was going on, but like, you've been dragged into the middle of an almighty shitstorm here that is probably going to linger for years and years. And like, it'd be interesting when you go back in with England what the dynamic now is between the Saracens players and players from other clubs, some of whom have been very vocal, I think, as to, like, there's the glory and there's that, but as was pointed out, people lose their jobs in professional sport because teams are relegated, because results go certain ways. And the sense is that, like, as you're clearly aware, that Saracens cheated and caused that. So, like, that must have some sort of an effect.
Look, it is what it is. I'm aware that everyone's got different opinions on it. From being inside the camp, I've obviously got a difference of opinion than probably a lot of other people. There are other players who, from other clubs, who are you know, standing up and saying that, you know, they have been trying to do things the right way. So everyone's got different opinions, and that's my view on it.
Were you one of the players who had the other deal?
I wasn't, but these are the ins and outs I'd probably draw a line at.
Yeah. It's obviously means you're coming back to a totally different situation whereby, again, you would start the season strong favourites for Champions Cup, strong favourites for the Premiership, and it looks as though actually you're going to end up progressing through the Champions Cup, a huge game coming up this weekend. Like, for where you are in your career and all you want to achieve, like, suddenly do you feel in a very different position, like you're fighting for survival? Like, that's not what you're used to with Saracens.
It's something different. 100% something different, but there's not to say that there's not a challenge in that, and I think there's been an unbelievable buy-in from everyone within the group on that case.
You're very good to come in and talk about it, firstly, and it's a difficult position for a player. You've left, you were a part of it, and you're probably more aware of maybe what everyone is saying on the outside, Dominic. Like, this is an almighty scandal that is going to just linger, you feel, for English rugby for years to come.
Yeah, look, I personally think that there needs to be clarity throughout the whole league. I don't think everyone can just point a finger at Saracens. I think every single club needs to be audited, looked at.
Well, surely that's been happening, that if there were questions about other clubs, that would be investigated. Like, it's a bit rich to suddenly start pointing the fingers elsewhere when Saracens have been deemed to have been found guilty.
No, yeah. Like, look, I'm not pointing. I don't want to.
I know they decided not to appeal. Like, it does feel as though just somebody come out and put their hands up and going, you know what, we did wrong. We apologise. We can't undo what happened in the past. But I mean, the attitude that seems to be there is we have a different point of view in it. Like, there is no two points of view in this. Like, the decision was made that they broke the salary cap, which is cheating.
Yeah, but we don't know. Yeah. Okay, that's fine. I accept that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we know everything that went on in that meeting, in that whole hearing. So it's such a difficult topic to comment on. We can give our opinion, which George has done, I think, and I'm sure there'll be more things that come to light. Yeah. And we just got to feel our way through the situation, I think.
What was that conversation like at the start of the season then, where you're trying to figure out what the priorities are? Because everyone wondered what would happen with Europe. As to, like, staying at the Premiership is obviously the main focus. You're starting with a big points deduction, with slowly but surely you're starting to claw back. Yet you go into this final game now at Racing, knowing a victory will be enough to get you through to the knockout stage. Was Europe seen as a bonus this season? If you can somehow scrape through, brilliant. But if not, we know where the priority is.
I think it's been our coach has publicly said that we'd focus on the Premiership. Mm. We've played 42 players in Europe so far this year, so it's you know, it's been great for the youngsters and great for their development. But yeah, now we've got an opportunity to focus on Europe again, so you know, that may well be our focus as well.
Yeah, obviously this weekend is huge. Mm. For your personal situation then, like, the expectation seems to be that players will leave. You've been strongly linked with a move to Japan. Like, is that something that's definitely of interest to you? You've 18 months on your contract?
Yeah, around that. I do like Japan, and I like the idea of an experience. It would just be a question of when, really.
Yeah. Would it be frustrating that you end up having to leave? Like, you've been at Saracens pretty much your whole life. That you end up having to leave a year early?
Anything would be done on, you know, on both of our terms. Mm. So it's something I've been very open with for years, and something that, you know, if it happens, it happens. If not, it doesn't.
One thing I did want to ask you about while you're here, because we're obviously looking ahead to a Six Nations, which I'm sure you'll be very much a part of. Andy Farrell is taking over as Ireland head coach, first head coach job. You've both worked with him. You'll have worked with him at Saracens and at England at times. He certainly comes across as someone who was always destined to be a head coach. Mm. Would that be in your sense?
Yeah, for sure. He's in terms of clarity and what I like in situations, he's a top coach in that sense, and he'll be up there. He's also learnt from, you know, he's been underneath a fair few very good coaches and very different coaching styles. So I imagine he'll have built his armoury quite well, and you know, he'll be the proper stuff.
It is such a brilliantly weird dynamic that obviously when Ireland go up against England, that his son is going to be the key player. Like, is there something you can slag him about?
No.
Do you slag on Farrell?
No.
No.
They're both highly driven people. And I think, they're, you know, at the top of both of their games because of that reason. So it's just, I guess at that point, it's just business, isn't it? You've got to get on with what you do.
So what's next for you? Locks can often go on playing well into their 30s. So maybe this is the foreseeable future off the pitch. Like, do you see yourself as a coach down the line, or do you very much like the business side of things?
No, I studied business when I was in the academy. Mm. You know, and I had a big keen interest throughout academics at school as well. So this is something I'm definitely interested in. We've spoken to loads of people, and I think their words are, you know, the most fun you'll have off a field will be setting up a startup. So this is something that I'm fully getting my teeth stuck into, there's a good opportunity for us. There's a good future in what we're doing, I'm fully pumped for what it holds.
And for you, Dominic, it's very early days, but is this giving you the satisfaction you crave post retirement, or think, you know what, I need to be out in the pitch involved in some way?
Do you know, I haven't missed it. I haven't missed it at all.
He's not joking.
I never really enjoyed the likes of George and Will Skelton and Billy Vunipola running at me every day when I was in the opposite team to them. So, it's been a great transition for me. And it's obviously something that a lot of players struggle with. Mm. But to have something to dive straight into and to get my teeth into has been awesome, great, and I'm just loving it.
And did the month in Clontarf give you the love for Ireland that you'll set up home here?
There's whispers of it, but we'll see. We'll see about that.
The kids end up playing for Wales or Ireland then?
She's born in England as well, so.
In England, yeah, exactly.
let's rule that out straight away. Lads, you've been very good with your time. 4-5 CBD. The best advertising we've had in here in quite a while.
Yeah, it's quite absurd, isn't it?
You can. The best place to go, I suppose, is the website, 4-5-CBD, but you are starting to distribute around Ireland as well.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. So we're going to be visiting a few sports clubs, a few stores, and getting the name out there.
All right, Dominic Day, George Cruz, it's been very good with your time. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Cheers.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.